Hey, everybody. Kevin Grossman, president of Talent Board. If improving your recruiting processes and the candidate experience for both external and internal candidates are key priorities for you and your organization, then we highly recommend you register for our 2019 North American Candy Symposium and Awards Gala in Washington, D.C. on October 14th. We have a full day of amazing speakers and sessions, and we're also doing this event in conjunction with the ERE Recruiting Conference on October 15th and 16th. So the evening of the 14th, you can come join us at the joint reception with the ERE. And then that evening, you can enjoy our gala awards dinner where we celebrate the 2019 North American Candy Experience Awards winners, companies that have the highest positive candidate ratings in our research, and enjoy a dinner and award ceremony. Just go to thetalentboard.org and click on the Candy Symposium and Awards Gala link, and then you can register with code CE19VIP to save $50 off an already very reasonable registration price. We hope to see you in DC on October 14th. Now enjoy the podcast.
We can minimize it though, because we need a mind shift on how we think about people that we perceive different than we are, because differences are real or perceived. I mean, we can see two people that look totally different. And of course, in our mind, the first thing that we say, oh, they must be coming from totally different backgrounds. And then we realize that they are the same ethnicity, same race, same nationality. You know, they just look different.
You're listening to the Candy Shop Talk podcast, brought to you by Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards Benchmark Research, and hosted by Kevin W. Grossman. Talent Board is the first nonprofit research organization focused on elevating and promoting a quality candidate experience. The Candy Shop Talk podcast welcomes Sahar Andrade, an ID, inclusion, and diversity advocate whose mission it is to eliminate discrimination or at least reduce it, and a speaker at the 2019 California HR Conference. Listen in on how improving candidate experience impacts recruiting and the business bottom line. Sahar, thank you so much for joining me on the Candy Shop Talk podcast. Before we dive into the rest of the show, why don't you tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do today?
Absolutely. Kevin, thank you for having me on your podcast. My name is Sahar Andrade, and I am a diversity, cultural competence, and cross-cultural leadership consultant and trainer. My passion is more about diversity and inclusion. I live by it day by day, and I try to apply it in my life every single second. I believe that we can never stop learning, that we need to deal with human beings as that are different than we are as just human beings. I believe in people accepting each other, and I believe this is part of my mission in life, and that's what I love to do.
Well, and I so appreciate that, because it's sad. Sadly and unfortunately, these are quite difficult times when it comes to that. But we're going to talk about the positive things that you're working on and you're doing to make a difference out there, right?
So I love that.
Yes. You're going to be speaking at the 2019 California HR Conference, and you're going to be talking about acknowledging and dealing with unconscious bias. So first of all, we hear a lot about that, and especially over the past few years, but why don't you tell us exactly what unconscious bias is and how it influences our perceptions?
Absolutely. First of all, let me just say that a lot of people I do a lot of trainings of unconscious bias, and what I noticed or observed is that a lot of people kind of recoil back from discussing unconscious bias or even bringing it to the surface, because somehow the perception or of the meaning of the word unconscious bias is that someone is racist. And that's why they avoid talking about it. But what I always say is that unconscious bias is part of who we are, is part of our survival mechanism. So we all have it. What matters is what we do with it, because we all have it. Recognizing it, knowing how to deal with it. I say it's exactly like anger. We all have anger. What we do with it is what is really important. So to kind of define what unconscious bias is, I call it a blind spot. Basically, that we have, and the blind spots that we get, obviously we get it from our first contact, that is our parents, and they got it from their parents, and it keeps going on generations if we do not stop the cycle. It's the blind spot that basically, like when we drive, we have a blind spot in the mirror. If we get into an accident, it might not be 100% our fault, but it's 100% our responsibility.
Completely agree with you on that. And I think we're too quick to judge and jump from unconscious bias.
Unfortunately.
Well, we are, and to calling each other, you know, racist and whatever. That, I mean, there's so many things that make us up as individuals. Let's say you're sitting in front of a room like you're going to be doing when you speak and you do on a regular basis. What is one of the first things you recommend that we do just to recognize the bias that we do have? What should we do first?
The first thing is to accept that we have that unconscious bias. I usually explain what it is, and I usually go into the root of why we have unconscious bias. I have a medical background, so I always go to the root of the issue to find a treatment rather than going through the symptoms. So if we get to know why do we have unconscious bias, it's easier for us to accept that we have it, and then we can choose to work in a way that we diminish it, because unconscious bias will never go away.
Right.
This is another thing that we need to realize. We can minimize it, though, because we need a mind shift on how we think about people that we perceive different than we are, because differences are real or perceived. I mean, we can see two people that look totally different. And of course, in our mind, the first thing that we say, oh, they must be coming from totally different backgrounds. And then we realize that they are the same ethnicity, same race, same nationality. You know, they just look different. You know, but so perceptions are real or perceived, knowing that our brain instinctively works against diversity and that we make sense of the world as we are, not as the world is. The biggest issue in unconscious bias is that it's unconscious, so it's unexamined behavior.
Right, right. Absolutely. Couldn't make it any more clearer than that. Let's segue a little bit to the subject of diversity and inclusion, because I know in the research that I do via Talent Board, that's actually top of mind for a lot of talent acquisition leaders and their teams. It's top of mind for business leaders. And we've been talking about it for a while. But from your perspective, you know, what will it take to really achieve inclusiveness in the workplace in the next 5 to 10 years? What do you think? What do we need to do?
Realize that diversity without inclusion will not work. If we keep calling out only our differences, it will act as exclusion rather than inclusion. And to define properly what inclusion is basically constructively calling out our differences so we can offer a safe environment for every single person to achieve their full potential. So the steps that we need to take, number one, is to recognize that to have diversity and inclusion, we need to establish our reasons. We need to make the number one reason a mission reason. Basically, that as a workplace, as a whole, we are designed to improve life, not only for our diverse employees, but also for all the diverse communities that we serve, no matter what field or industry we are in. That's number one. Number two, we need to establish the business reason why we're doing this, because diversity and inclusion is not the nice thing to do, but it's the proper business decision to make. Organizations need diverse people, like people of color, women, people with disabilities, people with different sexual orientations, people with different learning skills, people with different thoughts, because as employees, that's how we conduct our business as a workplace or as an organization. Because the managers, directors, and executives, they also create specifically if they look or they reflect how the workforce is, you know, they will help increase the productivities and revenues, obviously. And once the workforce reflects the communities that it serves or the clients and customers, then we have the return on our money. We need to remember that people want to deal with people that reflect who they are, that reflect how they look, talk, think, that have the same experience, that have the same background, because as human beings, we need to relate and to feel safe, because this is how our brain chemistry works.
Right. And that's the conundrum, right? Because that's, we want to be with like-minded, similar people that we're familiar with. And yet, you know, there are bodies of research from McKinsey, and you touched on this a little bit, McKinsey and other research organizations that have shown again and again, when we have a more diverse, even at sometimes there's more friction in a more diverse and inclusive workplace, but there's proof that there's a bigger return for the organization at the end of the day. So why is it so hard for us to get there? Is it because that we just, our biology just resets us back again to, I need to be with these people that I know and like?
The brain to feel safe, because unfortunately, our brain never evolved since the caveman. So we still act the same way, which I call the CF. We fight, flight, or freeze. And that's why we feel safe in our comfort zone when we are around people that reflect the way we look or act or think. One of the biggest obstacles that I see in big organizations is that diversity could be like, let's go from top management, top executive leaders, let's trickle it down. And then people at the bottom will say, yeah, let's do it because this is what we need. But it gets stopped around the mid-management level. And they need coaching, they need training. And most importantly, I believe if we put the diversity goals and inclusion as part of the performance evaluation, you will see how fast everybody will really examine how we can apply these diversity management practices.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I know we're going to touch on this in a few minutes as well, but when organizations like talent acquisition teams, when their performance is tied to the candidate experience and what and the candidates perceive overall fairness in the process, that is higher. When their performance is tied to that, then there's definitely investment that's made to ensure that the candidate experience is consistent from pre-application to onboarding. Again, including all kinds of candidates, right? And I heard another speaker once, and I'm sure you'll concur with this, Sahar, but that we talk a lot in the workplace. And I've been in the HR recruiting space for over 20 years now. And I know that we talk a lot about culture fit. That's not right. That's not, and
believe in that.
It's not culture fit, it's culture add. What can you bring to, right? Exactly. And I think that's even a lighter way for folks to think of it. And it really got me thinking about how we should be thinking about that, right? Is that just what you bring to the organization at the end of the day?
Because culture fit is keeping things as they are. It's right. Like, let's stay in status quo. And that's not what diversity and inclusion is. And why also it's so hard for organization to get there or to achieve the proper diversity and inclusion measures is because usually organizations jump on the bandwagon of diversity and they put all these glitzy works on their website and literature, you know, like touching on diversity superficially just to show the outside world that guess what, we care about diversity and inclusion, like, or give the perception that they do. But there is a difference between diversity and applying actually inclusion as part of the diversity. Diversity and inclusion should become a part of the DNA of that organization, not just something that we have as a flavor of the month. It should be embedded in everything the organization communicates, acts, and executes. And I think one of the things, like when you were saying culture fit, this is, I totally believe it's not about being culture fit. The other thing that I don't believe that D&I, and that's basically my philosophy in life, diversity and inclusion is not compliance. And you are an HR person and you're probably not going to like what I'm going to say, because I don't believe that diversity should be under human resources. It should be a standalone function.
Well, and by the way, you're right about that. And I like to joke that I only play HR and recruiting on TV, by the way, Sahar. So but I do know, but there are, you know, larger organizations that the D&I function is separate from HR. And that I think we see that a lot more. And there's reasons for that, as you're pointing out. And I think that it is really important because they're not the same thing.
Diversity and inclusion in my book is more of a sensitivity issue, going back at the human basics. And in my experience, because I do that every day. And when I take people to who they really are at the root or at the core of who they are and why other people deal or act in certain ways, even because I always say people will do things that will make sense to them, even if it doesn't make sense to you. And I give a lot of live example of that, and people start getting it. You know, we need to move their emotional engagement so they can relate to other human beings on basic level. And I always say, no matter how different we are, there is always a bridge that we can find, even if it's only owning a dog or a cat.
Gosh, we need a lot more of that right now.
Right? But even if it's this as the minimum, we will always find something in common. We will always find a bridge that we can bridge that gap between us and someone different. And no, and that's why I don't think it's introducing diversity. I mean, the laws for diversity, like Title VII, ADA, ADE, and all that are great because they need to be there for protection. But the more we kind of shove it in people's face, like it's a law, they will, some might even just show you that they do, but it's not really the truth. And that's why the connection with other people will never be genuine. Versus when it's introduced as it's the right and sensitive things. Like, people talk about the golden rule, like deal with others like how you want to be treated. But I actually always talk about the platinum rule. We deal with others the way they want to be treated. You know, and it starts with us, Kevin. I mean, each one of us. I mean, Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. He didn't say, wait till others change and then you change.
Exactly. And we need a lot more willingness to go down that path, as well as a lot more empathy. But as it relates to bias in the workplace, and so I'm going to bring it home a little bit closer to HR and, sure, HR and recruiting, just in the context of it.
Absolutely. You know,
it definitely affects how we recruit, hire, and retain, as well as not just external candidates, but and current employees, right? Because it's the same.
Yep.
It's the same thing, is that candidate experience is employee experience is candidate experience. We're all perpetually in that realm, and you're having to constantly re-recruit to retain. So you touched on some of this a little bit, but how would you, you know, kind of what are some of the key considerations, one or two at least, that employers should pay attention to when it comes to recruiting, hiring and retention? What do you recommend?
Absolutely. The hiring, first of all, I always say never have only one person or two people panel interviewing people, because you can never know what bias can be in there. Right. Sure. So have a panel of four or five people doing those interviews. You know, in the beginning, you know, there has been some research and even some experiences that have been done where some organization hid the name of the applicants, and they saw an increase in hiring of women and people of color just because the name was taken away. You know, because it doesn't say who they are. Also, to retain them, we need to start thinking about things like, for example, if we have rewards for the company and say, okay, we're going to go into a camping trip or a hiking trip, we need to remember that we might have people with disability. When we do meetings, we need to make sure that the rooms that we have, you know, have a way access, like wheelchair access. If we have things in the kitchen and we need, when we have people that have some disabilities, we need to make sure that they are included. And most importantly is that we need as an organization to have a clear definition of what diversity looks like and the purpose of it. What does it mean? What are we looking for? Everything starts with a needs assessment or a cultural audit to identify the issues and the themes that are related to diversity and sort them out. And then we can identify the existing resources that we have, you know, what kind of data we have, assess the interpersonal behavior, organizational culture, and the procedures that impact the people that are already in the organization, and then the people that we are going to basically recruit. And also effective communication plan of why we are doing this. Manager should be expected to know why they're hiring and think about it, that it's not only about cultural fit, but what kind of value are you adding to me? And fortunately, a lot of interviewing is going in towards the emotionally intelligent interviewing rather than the boring questions that we always have about, like, you know, about what's your job description, which basically they can read on a resume. And it's important that when we recruit or hire people, to get them excited about joining us. And that's why we need to articulate the culture, the vision, the philosophy, you know, and the policies that we have about diversity. We need to maybe reevaluate the recruitment plan that we have. We need to place the jobs in different job boards that, you know, connect with associations and organizations that are ethnic. There are so many now, you know, make sure that if we have ERG groups or affinity groups to reach out for them to make sure that we can recruit people from there. Promote from the ranks because they know basically what we need. Advertise in, like I said, in major newspapers. Now it's more mainly social media, you know, online boards. Go to ethnic schools, you know, where different diverse students are there and try to hire from them. And that does not mean that you have to hire diverse people to show diversity, but give a chance for these people to apply. And at the end, what we need to recruit or to hire is the proper person for the job, not because they are diverse, we hire them.
Right.
And this is another, we cannot go to total left or total right.
Right.
You know, we can also mobilize the employees that we have to recruit through the network and maybe offer them a bonus if they come from them. And building these relationships with, like I said, swap information with other cultural or ethnic organizations. And then, of course, we need to assess the efforts that we have, you know, either quarterly or every 6 months or every year.
What else can we do to ensure that these diverse teams, everything that you've outlined and we've discussed in this podcast so far, that diverse teams can better thrive together than clashing? And there's nothing, friction's actually not a bad thing. I think sometimes we...
conflict is not always bad.
No, it's not always bad. And it can actually help businesses have spikes of innovation and thrive. And there's a lot of those things. But just from a team building perspective, kind of tying into what, you know, now we've done this recruiting and we're hiring, how can we make these diverse teams thrive?
Value people for who they are, not who you want them to be.
Right.
The other thing is believing that when you give people the proper tools, the proper environment, they can learn and change. It's like the Pygmalion effect, right? You give them positive, they will give you value people, they give you value back 99% of the time. And also we need to learn the demographics that we have as team members. Cross-cultural competence or even cultural humility becomes very important because when we have a diverse team, the diverse team might look at, there is something like in culture, as you know, power distance, masculine, feminine, you know, avoid risk or take risk, individual or collective. How we look, do we come from a monochronic time culture or polychronic time culture? All these affect the teams when they work together because I could be looking at time as flexible and some person might not know it's time is money, let's go and do it. And that these can cause clashes. How do we work in a collective manner or do we work in an individual manner? Do we look at authority and managers and power as power distance or that we are all the same? Even believe it or not, in the body language, the way the eye contact, there are some humble cultures, you know, that don't maintain the eye contact all the time. So it's not like they are hiding something or they're lying or they're not self-confident. It's part of their culture.
Right.
So that's why I'm saying valuing people for who they are, not who we want them to be. And it's also important is to develop a statement of purpose, basically saying and explaining to the team, to the diverse team, why are we doing this? And how does it relate to the mission of the team? What are the barriers we face? And we need to be honest. And I think the most important part that we don't do, and I have been asking people like wherever I go, where do you think the biggest challenge to diverse teams? And the answer that I keep hearing over and over is lack of exposure, lack of knowledge, and also being afraid of asking questions. So when I ask them asking questions, why you don't ask questions? Because you don't want to ask questions or not? So I get two answers. One of them because I don't want to sound stupid. And the second one is because I don't want to offend anybody. So political correctness at its best here. People walk, you know, I don't believe in political correctness at all. You know, it's about asking people, getting to know people. You know, can I get to know you? Can you educate me on this? What is the proper way to address you? You know, have cultural informants. You know, celebrate everybody for who they are. Try to get out of a status quo and get to know the people that are different.
Well, that's different. And again, the path that I agree with you on, that we should be on, and that goes back to what you're saying about we should value each other for who we are, not where we want them to be. Because the other side of this anti-political correctness is for me to say whatever the heck I want to you, and to be toxic and hateful about it as well. And that's not what we're talking about here.
So, absolutely. Okay, let me rephrase that. Do it in a respectful way.
Right. And that's what we're talking about. But again, it goes back to being having empathy and valuing other individuals for who they are. Well, Sahar, this has been an amazing conversation, and I so look forward to your session at the California HR conference. The last thing I like to ask all my guests, because we're always working all the time, right? It's always about work.
Yes.
And it's fine, and it's important, but there's other things that we like to do, right? So what else does Sahar like to do besides work?
I love to travel. I love, my husband and I are like, we like to go at least this weekend we are away, you know, like we say, we work hard, but we play harder. I love playing with my two little dogs. I love going to different places, believe it or not, trying different foods, you know, even that we have never tried before.
Sure.
Going to different countries that we have never seen before. I was lucky enough that I grew up in 7 different countries.
Wow.
So for me, like, that's why I'm so passionate about diversity and inclusion. You know, it's part of who I am, basically. I love to read. I love music. I cannot live without music. And I love to get to know people.
Well, I underscore all those things, very much relate to all of those. And I'll tell you, when haven't lived in different countries, but my wife and I have traveled a lot throughout our time together. And now we bring our children with us. And because we think it's highly important, with as much as within your budget you can do, to go, whether it's to another state or to another country, go out there and learn and experience and be with other people from different backgrounds. And again, that's the way you can learn again to have more empathy and to value each other as well. So,
and it opens your mind.
Yes, totally does. Totally does. Well, Sahar, thank you so much for being on the Candy Shop Talk podcast, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person as well. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Candy Shop Talk podcast. For more information about Talent Board and the Candidate Experience Awards and benchmark research, visit www.thetalentboard.org.